Welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. Now let's begin.
Podcast listener, and welcome back to the Pop Culture Pup Podcast. I'm your host this week. My name is Chris Lockhart, and joining me this week is my co-host in crime, Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
Chris, it's going well. As it keeps getting warmer and nicer out, I'm convinced I was born too far north.
Yeah, I agree. I used to be a winter kid. You know, like, I loved winter. I loved being indoors. I loved Christmas, my birthdays in winter. We used to have a skidoo growing up, so I used to, you know, go skidooing a lot and tobogganing and that sort of thing. But as an adult, like, having to drive winter roads and get up and, you know, have to go out and start your vehicle and all that kind of stuff. Like, I would prefer year-round summer.
Yeah, and for me, it's not even the shoveling or the cold or anything else. At this point, it's the feeling like I'm trapped in my own house.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, and yes, I'm aware I could, you know, go skiing, snowmobiling, like all the outdoorsy stuff. But that's just... it's never interested me. You know, like, I'll go on a nature hike when the weather's nice all day long, every day.
Yeah.
But I would never cross-country ski or, you know, something like that.
Yeah. I'm the same way. Like, yeah, as I'm older, I don't have a skidoo anymore. I don't, you know, like, I'll go skating occasionally at the rink. But even this winter, I didn't even do that once. But... yeah. No, I'm a summer person myself.
Yeah. I'm enjoying it so much. Other quick thing to be old men for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Chris, if you haven't tried I don't believe I brought it up, but I made that mistake last time where I didn't think I'd mentioned something to you and it turned out I had. So I'm apologizing ahead of time. Have you tried Breathe Right strips?
Yes.
Did I bring it up before?
No. Okay. I have, like, I tried them, like, years and years ago. Like, I want to say at least it's 17 years ago that I tried them. And the reason why I say that is because I remember it was right after I started my current job. I was out, they sent me away for training, and I remember I was using them to reduce my snoring. And I just remember my one colleague, the one night I forgot to put it on, and he could tell the difference. Cause back then we had to share a room when we went for training. But so yeah, that was 17 years ago now, but yeah, I've tried them and they do work.
Yeah.
So you're using them right now then?
I never used them before. And, it's part of the nicer weather. I was just like, I don't feel like I'm, you know, I'm feeling better, but I don't feel like I'm getting a good breath in.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to wear them at work because they're very obvious.
Yeah.
But I started wearing them as soon as I got home, and I'm just, you know, going around the house, getting stuff done. And then, of course, at night, and I'm like, I feel like I can breathe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you start wondering, is this what other people feel like? You know, every day, and I've been missing out. Then my dad informs me that he has a deviated septum, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That he had to get massive nose surgery done to correct. And he said, you know, chances are I share some sort of genetics with it.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, anything you can do to get a deeper breath, you know, a good breath there. He's like, you should absolutely be using this stuff.
Yeah.
I said, it's an absolute game changer. And I'm trying to, you know, exercise more and everything too, so now I'm wearing it then as well. And it's just like, oh my god, is this what normal people feel like?
Yeah, I probably have something very similar. When I was a kid, my nose was broken. I was like one, I think, and my little my cousin who was three and could walk. Like my mom recounts it that I was on my blanket on the floor playing with my toys, and she literally just walked right up to me and booted me right in the nose.
Jeez, it's not funny at all.
Yeah,
I was not prepared for this.
Yeah, no, it's fine, but yeah, I guess there's blood everywhere. Like I've had problems with nosebleeds my whole life, and then yeah, like with my allergies and stuff, it just got worse with breathing and everything. So actually, I went to a nose doctor, and yeah, he wanted to do surgery to correct it, because he actually, like, you know, had one of those little cameras, and he could show it up my nose and show me where, like, I have broken cartilage under the skin pushing out. But yeah, I've never done that. No.
Yeah.
I'm too scared to go under the knife.
No, I agree. Same.
But anywho. So yeah, for tonight's episode, it's just Kevin and I. Unfortunately, our other castmates cannot join us this evening, but we shall carry on. For this topic for tonight, we're talking questionable pop culture. So we're discussing things in pop culture that, in hindsight, make us question whether it was okay at the time, or was it never okay? So, Kevin, I know you've got notes for this evening, so I'll let you kick it off. What's your first example of questionable pop culture?
Okay. It's pop culture. It's overall. It was in our day-to-day lives. Us being, you know, close to the same age here, and a lot of our listeners as well. I will say it is certain language choices that were done as insults that we now know better.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in our own vernacular and in in plenty of movies and TV and other things. Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean things like, and again, just using this for the quote and the example.
Yeah.
So I don't get myself or Chris in trouble here.
No.
But calling people retarded.
Mm-hmm.
Calling people gay.
Yep.
Certain things like that, that when we were younger was just the insult. It was just what you said, and we didn't put an ounce of thought into what the words actually meant, or the context we're using it, or anything. And looking back, I'm like, I can't believe we were doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things is, we were using those terms to insult people, but as we've become smarter, hopefully.
Mm-hmm.
These are terms we're using to insult people that is not anything. Like, this is just how someone is born, and we're using it as a way to insult other people.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's, you know, thankfully we learned along the way, like, that's wrong. If someone's being stupid, that's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all work with people that are stupid. We all see it, you know, while we're driving, someone's acting stupid, whatever.
Yeah.
And we have many synonyms for that. But retarded, or, you know, the words we use now instead, is a completely different thing.
Mm-hmm.
And someone who is born a certain way and needs assistance.
Yep.
You know, like, not something to insult about. And crazy to, like, it's crazy to my son, you know, when he's like, he just can't comprehend we used to use gay as an insult.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, who cares? I said, I know. But it's just the way that we were. I said, and honestly, it's even, I got thinking about it. The Simpsons has been on, what, like, over 30 years now?
Yep.
Give or take. Yeah. And I remember the episode, I believe John Walters was doing the voice, but it was Homer hanging out with this new person in town who he thinks is cool, And then it turns out the guy's gay, and now Homer's like, oh, I can't believe I was hanging out with a gay guy. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, like, they did it Simpson smart, but still we have decades past where it's like, oh my god, I can't, like, it's so weird to see things in the past when it was treated as like, oh, what a quirky, odd, eccentric person, what an oddity, what a weirdo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how it was treated, when it's like, it's not that at all. And also, this is far more common than you think. It's just everyone's keeping it hidden because they don't want to be attacked.
Yep.
You know, it just, and for my son, like, you know, granted, at 10, I'm like, well, you shouldn't. I hope no 10-year-old's thinking about dating anyone. Mm-hmm. I don't care what your preference is. Like, just be 10.
Yeah.
But there's enough things, you know, for, he knows for life, or sees on, you know, a TV show or movie or whatever, and he doesn't care. You know, people can date whoever they want to date. It does not affect him or most of his generation at all. And I was just like, wow, we've come so far.
Yep.
And if I play anything, you know, like, oh, geez, let's, like, we watched, not that these movies are the example, but, like, he's seen Ghostbusters and loved it. Monster Squad, it's been a while. We should try to watch it again this Halloween season in a few months. But, like, he's seen things from the time frame that I grew up in, and some of it holds up and is fine, and other things he's like, wait a minute, why is this word being used? Why is this being said? And I'm like, oh, God, let me explain how terrible we were back then.
Yep.
I was like, we've learned stuff, buddy. We've learned. And, like, I don't want to take him further back and be like, well, your grandparents' generation, let's see how they treated black people.
Yeah.
I don't really want to ruin everything for him.
Yeah.
You know, but there's part of me is like, we're making progress, bud. There's been progress between our generations, progress between mine and my parents, your grandparents' generation. I said, and when you're older, there'll be progress. I don't know what it will be yet. That's in the future, but there'll be more progress being made.
Yeah.
Well, as long as we're moving forward, that's all that matters.
It's funny. I had this discussion last week with a group of people, and because one person said, he said something in saying, like, this is retarded, meaning this is stupid, right? Mm-hmm. Instead of just saying this is stupid, he said this is retarded. And then we got talking about this, like, you shouldn't be, you know, like, I kind of, like, hey, you know, you really shouldn't use that word. Or what, you know, like, I mean, amongst our group, it's fine. But, you know, certain ears hear that, you know, you could get in trouble, you know. And then we got talking about things we can't say anymore, like, yeah, like the N-word. You know, like, when I was a kid, the N-word got tossed around by non-African-American people a lot, you know, to refer to African-American people. Now we don't do that. Now, you know, it's just rappers and people like that, you know, use that word. And that's fine. That's a word that I don't think should be used, you know, because the meaning behind it is to disparage, you know, like when it's used by someone of not of that background. But yeah, it's crazy how far we've come. In so many other ways too. Like, for example, smoking.
I was debating that for my list.
It's crazy to think that, you know, like, McDonald's, for example, like if you go to the Pop Culture Pub podcast group, dear listener, and look under albums on Facebook, you'll see I have a McDonald's album there. And one of the pictures in that album is of a McDonald's ashtray, because you used to be able to smoke at McDonald's. And we didn't think anything of it. Like, it was normal. Like, now, if I'm around a smoker, like, I can smell it on me, you know? Like, And especially when you go into a smoker's house, like, you can always tell.
Yeah.
You know, like, God bless my dad. Like, he passed away last year, you know. But when he was alive, I would stay at his house when I was working, because he lived 15 minutes from where I worked, but he smoked in his house, and so did his wife. And every time I would come home from my week of work, the first thing I would do was change my clothes and put them in the washing machine, because that's all I could smell when I walked into my house, because there's no smoking in my house. You know, the first thing I could smell, like, you know, taking my, because at my job, I have to change from my civilian clothes into my working clothes. We call them grays. But basically, it's like a uniform that we have to wear at work. Basically, to cut down on contamination. We don't want to bring any contaminants from work home, that sort of thing. So we have a change room, and I would put my clothes from, like, having stayed at my dad's house into my locker, change into my clothes, and then at the end of the day, as soon as I open my locker, that's all I can smell is cigarettes. And I don't smoke, so, you know, it just clings to you. But, I mean, it used to cling to us back then, but more people used to smoke. And it was in more public spaces, so it wasn't, you just never noticed it. Like, yeah, I remember one time, because I had to go straight to a doctor's appointment one day after work. So I went straight to the doctor's office without having changed or anything. And the first thing the doctor said as soon as he walked into the room was, "Did you start smoking?" And I had to explain to him, "No, it's just on my clothes from my dad's house, you know, like, that's just, you know, the way it is." And yeah, it was crazy. But yeah, back in those days, we just never noticed it because everyone we knew smoked, you know, like, you were always going, you know, like, even if your parents didn't smoke, your grandparents didn't smoke, chances are, you know, you were going to somebody's house that smoked. Chances are, like, I know at my house, like, well, not my house, but, like, my grandma's house, my grandma and grandpa didn't smoke, but people could come there and smoke if they wanted, you know? So, like, my mom and dad would go to my grandma and grandpa's, and they would, you know, back then when they were smokers, they would smoke, and they quit for a few years, but then they started back up. But, yeah, it was normal, you know? You go to a restaurant, people are smoking. You go to the doctor's office, people are smoking. Like, it was just normal. But now, looking back, like, we look at that behavior and we just think that's nuts. Like, there's no way I'd ever want to go back to that. And it's the same with, yeah, like you're saying, the use of language, you know, like the words that, you know, like, yeah, like gay and fag, you know, used to be an insult, and they shouldn't be. And it was silly that, you know, we would associate those words, you know, that demographic of people as, you know, being an insult. Like, it was wrong, and it was just the way it was. It was, you know, I'm glad the progress we've made. Sometimes I think we go a little too far sometimes, you know, like when it comes to, you know, renaming the Cleveland Indians, the Cleveland Guardians. I kind of think we went a little too far there. Because as a native person myself, I don't mind the word Indians being associated with that ball team, because if you actually look at the history of the Cleveland Indians, it's actually a term of admiration, because the Cleveland Indians were named that because they were the first Major League Baseball team to have Native American players. And, you know, they, you know, went with it. Like, they celebrated it. But then somebody got offended because for some reason people think Indians a derogatory term. I don't see it that way, anyway.
The smoking thing, it's just funny you bring it up. I saw it, I want to say it was on TikTok, but I don't remember where, and I'll never find it again, just the way those things work.
Mm-hmm.
But it was this guy that, he's a professional photographer, and he said, "I'm looking at this picture and I'm trying to think, why does it look so pretty? why does it look so good, and why can I not recreate this shot myself? And it's an NBA game from like 70s, 80s, whatever.
Yeah.
And just beautiful shot of, you know, one guy coming up to, I don't even know if he's going to dunk or if he's just in the air with the ball, and whoever, you know, other team trying to block him. And there's just this blue glow over everything, and the way the lighting is all, it's gorgeous, beautiful shot. He's like, because everyone's smoking.
Yep.
And the smoke adds a certain layer that you can't recapture otherwise. And he's showing like old boxing photos and stuff like that. And he's like, we will never, ever get photos like this again. And I was like, damn, I never would have thought of that. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying like, oh yeah, if I go to an event, I want everyone smoking so I can't breathe and can barely see. No, but I can understand in his interpretation of the art, like I will never be able to have this again. Unless I had like, steam whatever things that some places use,
mm-hmm.
you know, to just add like an atmosphere to the arena or something. He's like, that's the only way I could ever hope to recreate it, and even that will not produce as much as an arena full of people smoking.
yeah, it's crazy. Another thing I don't miss with smoking in public is I remember this one time. It was when I was in high school. We were at a pool hall, you know, playing billiards, and you could smoke in there.
Mm-hmm.
So all the, you know, high school kids would go there to smoke, right? Anyway, I'm playing pool, and, like, I didn't smoke, but my friend smoked. But we had, like, there was this one girl that was watching our game or whatever, and she's smoking, and she wasn't really paying attention to where her cigarette was going. So as I'm walking around the table to get my shot, she like hits me in the arm with the lit part of her cigarette.
Oh,
that hurts. And I had like a burn, you know, for a while. And man, did that hurt like hell. And I know there's this one safety video that we watch or that I've watched, about this guy that got burnt up in this industrial accident. But anyway, he's telling the story because he had to go to the Chicago burn unit. And he's telling the story about this one girl or one lady that how she got there was she for Halloween, she went to a Halloween party. She was dressed up as a mummy. So she wrapped herself up in gauze and she was at this party or at a bar or whatever. And there was smoking. And someone bumped into her with their lit cigarette, and she just went up in flames, like, instantly. So that's why she was at that burn unit. And, I mean, crap like that used to happen all the time with cigarettes. Like, I don't miss it. I don't miss it at all. But anyway, let's move on. The first example I got, and this is actually the reason why I came up with this idea for this topic, is somewhere I was watching this old clip of Austin Powers 2, The Spy Who Shagged Me, and it's the scene where Fat Bastard is going to Dr. Evil for the first time, and he wants to get paid for whatever he did, and then Dr. Evil sends out Mini-Me with the briefcase of money to give to Fat Bastard, and then, like, Fat Bastard's trying to grab him. And then he says to Dr. Evil, you know, keep the money, but, you know, I'll take your baby. He's talking about Mini-Me. And then he's like, you know, get in my belly. Like, you know, and he makes a comment that he's ate a baby previously. And then he sings, like, the Chili's commercial, you know, baby back ribs, you know, Chili's baby back, yeah. You know, not the 90s commercial that we all watched. I remember at the time in the theater watching that, like, this is 25 years ago now, watching the theater, and it was funny to see Mike Myers in the, you know, because he plays Fat Bastard. He's in, like, the prosthetics, so he's playing this gigantic dude, and then, you know, doing the Chili's commercial theme song, it, you know, we all laughed. We all thought it was funny at the time. But all, you know, these years, and I mean, I've watched the movie, like, a couple times afterwards, like, you know, we own the VHS, like, my mom owned the VHS, so, you know, we watch it a few times, at her place, you know, years ago. I haven't seen it in years. Like, it's probably been 20 years since I've seen this movie. I seen that clip, and I got thinking to myself, he's literally talking, he literally refers to having ate a baby. How is that, like, first of all, how is that funny? And second of all, like, that is dark. That is, you know, like, that's, in terms of cannibalism, not that there's any good cannibal. All cannibals are bad. Cannibalism is not good. But that's got to be the worst, you know, when you're eating babies. How was that, like, how did we, like, get past our senses to say that, you know, to laugh at that? And not only that, you know, that the fact that it endures, like, it was on this clip I seen on YouTube or Facebook or whatever. So yeah, I question that. Like, I question that joke. I question myself, because I know I laughed at it at the time, because, you know, but I think I was more laughing at Mike Myers being in the fat suit and then singing the Chili's song and not really thinking about what was being said. But that is very questionable pop culture. Like, that's what made me come up with this topic. Kev, what are your thoughts on that?
I have been thinking, so it has been brought up, and I haven't watched it, but all of this around the same era, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
But someone brought up, hey, if you watch Chasing Amy now, it doesn't really hold up. And I'm like, oh, don't tell me that.
Yeah.
And I thought, when I was in my 20s, I was and learning about, you know, people's sexual history and dating and stuff like that. Like, that movie hit at a perfect time.
Mm-hmm.
Of being, you know, 20s and ignorant to relationships and everything. But in my 40s, I'm like, yeah, it probably does not. It probably doesn't hold up the same way. And there's probably stuff that I'm like, oh, God, that's a dumb 20-year-old thing. You know, but then I got going from there. One of my friends randomly, he said, know what I watched the other night? Because, you know, I don't know what channel it was on. He's like, I watched Deuce Bigelow Male Gigolo. And I thought, why in the hell in 2024 did you watch that? And he said, do you remember the movie at all, Chris?
Yep.
Do you ever see it? All right.
Oh, yeah.
He starts doing impressions of one of the characters in the movie, and I'm actually losing it laughing. I'm like, I haven't thought of that in probably 20 years.
Okay. I got to ask. Is it the lady with Tourette's?
No.
Oh, okay. I seen that recently as well. And no, that's Amy Poehler from Saturday Night Live.
Is it really?
It is, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And,
all right.
And to be honest, I laughed. I thought it was funny. But anyway, go ahead, guys.
No, it was the large black woman played by a man there. But he starts doing quotes like, I'm sorry, I just had pudding an hour ago. I'm like, this is the dumbest shit. And I'm losing it. But I'm thinking, like, it's not really, I'm like, it is a fat joke, but it isn't a fat joke too.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is so stupid, but, and yet I'm still laughing. I'm like, oh, there's no way. But yeah, part of me is like, I'm going to sit down and watch this movie next year at some point, aren't I? Like the Austin Powers ones I got thinking of too, you know, like now I'm down a rabbit hole. I'm thinking, all right, what from that time frame would still be funny and what would fall apart? And I kept thinking, like, the Austin Powers movies, I gotta imagine, do not hold up anymore. I mean, one, the third was trash and killed the franchise anyways.
Yeah.
But I kept thinking, I'm like, I am willing to bet there's a lot of stuff in there that just seems sexist or like any ist and ism that you want to think of. I'm like, I guarantee there's examples just like, oh, that's a product of its time.
Yeah, there, like I said, there's, like, I've seen other clips as well, but there's some funny things, like, you know.
Oh, I'm not saying it's all yeah. terrible or anything, but I guarantee there's some stuff that, you know, you're watching. Like, what the heck was that? Oh, so I was trying to think of, like, stupid, silly movies to watch with my kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going through and I'm looking at lists and stuff, and I thought, Ace Ventura, oh my gosh, Ace Ventura is a total boy movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's stupid stuff and ridiculous stuff and gross out stuff and everything. And then I actually do, like, a full, you know, I'm reading a full review of, like, okay, but is there anything I'm missing? As I'm reading stuff, I'm like, yeah, no, nope, I will not be playing that.
Nope.
Like, there's a lot of stuff in there that is not appropriate, or I don't feel like explaining, or it's just jokes that we don't make anymore.
Just the opening sequence, like, because it ends with him bringing that dog back to that lady, and then she's like, well, I can't pay you, but, and then she gets, like, below the camera view.
Yep.
And I was like, yeah, that's definitely not for a kid.
No, but there's so much stuff I forgot.
Yeah. Like,
I'm thinking, you know, over-the-top silliness, oh, it's Jim Carrey just being, you know, making Jim Carrey faces. Then I start reading, I'm like, nope, I am completely wrong.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, I think I want to do The Mask with him.
Yeah, that would be okay. That was more, all age. I mean, there was some...
There's some stuff.
Suggestions, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, like, I'm not doing Austin Powers at all. I guarantee there's times... I guarantee if I do the Fat Bastard scene you're talking about or other things, I guarantee I'm going to have to pause and be like, all right, you know we don't think that anymore, right? Or you know we don't make that joke anymore, right?
Yeah.
Like, I have a feeling I will be apologizing for the past.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, there was some good things from the Austin Powers movies, but...
Yeah,
there's also, questionable things. But yeah, that Deuce Bigelow, like, I've only ever watched it once or twice, but I seen that scene with Amy Poehler, because that was before I knew who she was. So I was like, oh, I didn't realize she was in that movie. Because that was, like, what, 2000 when that came out? 99?
She must have been, like, early 20s.
Yeah, she was pretty young. And then, yeah, like, just some of the goofy, like, Rob Schneider, he can be pretty funny at times. You know, like, when he's using the bathroom at that restaurant, and then he just starts talking to the bathroom attendant, then you figure out it's his dad.
Yeah.
And they're trying to have, like, this serious talk, and someone's using the toilet. Oh, man.
And that's stupid, and it's boy humor.
Yeah.
And it's so stupid, but it's not... It doesn't break any rules, you know?
Yeah.
It's not... I don't have to feel bad about that. It's dumb, but there's nothing wrong with dumb.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, it must have been like 2000, because it was after The Matrix, because they have that scene in the movie where they rip off The Matrix.
Yeah, which everyone was doing.
Yeah, where he's fighting that other prostitute, because they go on a date, and he's thinking that she's paying for him, and she thinks he's paying for her. For her. Yeah. But yeah. Some fun stuff there. So Kevin, what's number two on your list?
All right. So it is also weight related.
Okay.
Okay. And it's just the two of us. So mm-hmm. It's not like I'm trying to earn brownie points with people. But I will say, and I'm going to say it in a joking way here, and then go and explain. But for stuff from our past that's just, you know, not a good thing anymore, I'm going to say skinny bitches. And what I mean, I'm purposely just trying to be silly there and get reaction, but like, you watch stuff from the 80s. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was the cocaine. I don't know. But you see stuff from the 80s where the girls have their ribs showing, just stick thin, nothing to them, and that was the height of beauty. And like, I can see like elbow bones.
Yep.
You know, just like they look like they need a telethon to raise money for food for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the height of beauty at the time. posters and, you know, Sports Illustrated swimsuit and everything. And you look at it now and I'm like, they look sick. They look unhealthy. They look sick. They look horrible. And you see what was, quote, fat then. I'm like, that's pretty. Mm-hmm. Like, the one that's shamed on these shows, on these movies, like, that's pretty. And these other ones I feel sorry for. And have no, you know, do nothing for me here. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, wow, that's changed a lot. And thankfully so. And you see things now where, you know, it is all about more of a healthy body weight and having curves and having muscle and, mm-hmm. you know, not feeling guilty for going out and eating a freaking sandwich. You know? And I'm just like, wow, we had such an unhealthy standard of beauty, which is all of human history and everything too, though. Like, I get, and I've done my, you know, look through history and all, your standard of beauty is always what is very tough for your average person to obtain.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you see, like, what's the quote? The Rubenesque women. And it's, yeah, because food was scarce.
Mm-hmm.
So if you had an abundance of food, that meant that you're wealthy, and that meant that was what everyone desired. So I guess the being stick thin thing in the 80s where, I don't know, because of cars, because of computers and offices and people being less active, all of a sudden it's like, oh, geez, we've gained weight. But look at these skinny people. They're attractive. They know what's going on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what is. And or based on that, could I explain why now we do have better body images? You know, for those that don't know, I watch a lot of wrestling. And you actually now, you used to have the same thing with women wrestling. Oh, it's a stick thin blonde and that's it. But now between all the different shows and all the different companies, there is actually a variety of body types and builds and shapes and muscle and, you know, curves and everything else. And you're like, oh, look, it looks like a collection of regular people here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not that all cookie cutter mold from, you know, someone that isn't allowed to eat cookies anymore because that might cause them to gain an ounce.
Yeah. Yeah. It, like you said, you know, back in the 80s and even like even in the 90s and even now there's still models like that. It's like now we have like the BMI, the body mass index.
And which is ridiculous, but that's a whole
other. It is, but I'm sure if you were to measure them against that body mass, it would show that they were unhealthy. Just the other way. Like usually BMI is used to measure people that are overweight, but you can be underweight, like and it be just as unhealthy and dangerous. I seen a picture or a video recently of a model, and yeah, you could see her cheekbones and her ribs and stuff. And, you know, no offense, like, if that's your natural, like, if that's just the way you look naturally, like, there are people that are just naturally skinny.
Yeah.
And I'm not throwing any shade at them. You know, but I'm worried that most people that look like that are looking like that way because they're doing something unhealthy.
Yeah.
You know, probably an eating disorder, probably, you know, at the very least not eating properly. You know, maybe there are some other substances at work there. And I know I read something somewhere years ago that Marilyn Monroe, you know, to me is like, had the perfect figure, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She had curves. She, you know, she wasn't, you know, skinny mini. But she was absolutely beautiful. But by today's standards, she would be considered an overweight model.
Yeah. I have one of my female friends was complaining. She's like, oh, I got a diet. And I thought, why? And she said, well, according to, you know, the BMI, whatever,
mm-hmm.
I'm obese. And I thought, where, and I, you know, I'm being very careful with the language I'm using for her.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't want to come across a certain way, but I'm like, in what world? She said, well, when I step on scale, and I'm like, okay, that doesn't take, all right, what's your height? What's your frame? What's your build? I said, and honest to God, don't slack me for what time of the month is it? Because that's going to cause your weight to fluctuate too.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is absurd.
Well, I think BMI, the big thing is it doesn't take into account frame.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you could be 6 feet, but your frame might be a lot bigger than someone that's 6 foot. You know, like myself, for example, I'm 6 foot, but my frame is that like a football player. Like I got broad shoulders. I'm just a big dude all around. So for me, like I know my BMI, I'm supposed to be at like 230 or something. I haven't been at 230 since I was like, I don't know, 14. Like there's just no way. You know, like if I starve myself, I could, sure. But I'm just a big dude. Like that's just, you know, like yes, I do need to lose some weight. I fully admit that. But there's no way I could hit 230 without, you know, I like being detrimental to me, I think.
Yeah. Well, like all right, depending on where they squeeze and what they check,
mm-hmm.
I've dropped a ton of weight, but I've never been able to lose it from my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Even the same height in high school, you know, so like awkward teenage body there,
mm-hmm.
I weighed 180 at 6 foot, and yep. I still had stomach weight that yep. I've just never been able to lose. So that's going to be, you know, for certain doctors and tests and whatever, that's going to be the first thing of like, oh, you have a stomach, therefore you are fat.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, no, there's clearly something else going on here. And, you know, I look at genetically, I'm like, all right, stomach, you know, like there's just some reason it cannot lose it there. And if any doctor ever says, hey, I have this idea, I'm willing to try it. But, all right, so I'm 180 at 6 foot and I have a stomach. I'm not fat.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not 180 now.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, that's the thing, though. Like, another thing that I don't think BMI takes into account, like I know they factor in age, but I don't really think they fully take that into account either, because as you get older, you get bigger. Like that's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Like my grandpa was a skinny guy his whole life, but he, you know, he had a gut, you know, in his senior years, and I don't think he was overweight. I don't think he was fat. That's just what happens to old guys. You know, like not all old guys, but some old guys, you know, they just mm-hmm. get a gut. It just, you know, like what we now refer to as a dad bod, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Side note,
mm-hmm.
dad bod, great name. Great name. I grabbed it right away. I've used it.
Yeah.
However, better term would have been father figure.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, did we fully explore this? Okay.
I think so.
All right. So the next one I got on my list is, why would... Okay, so after Revenge of the Sith, we're talking Star Wars here. Why would Obi-Wan and Luke keep their last names while in hiding? That's something that always bugged me, you know, because, you know, even before we had the prequel trilogy, we knew that Obi-Wan was on Tatooine looking, you know, watching over Luke. And then we later learned that Luke's father was Anakin Skywalker, who we learned becomes Darth Vader. Well, why would they, like, what when Obi-Wan delivered baby Luke to Owen and Beru, why wouldn't they just give Luke their last name to, you know, and then if Darth Vader shows up, you know, which he could, like, the thought process for Obi-Wan was that he took Luke to Tatooine because that would be the last place Vader would ever go, because he hated Tatooine. That's where his mom died. That, you know, you had the whole sand discussion in episode 2, how he hates sand. So Obi-Wan thinking he'll take Luke to Tatooine because he'll, Vader, if he even suspects that, you know, one of his, you know, children is alive, or he didn't know he was having twins, you know, he would never come to Tatooine. But even still, why use the name Skywalker? Why not use Lars? Because Uncle Owen's last name was Lars. Why wouldn't Owen and Brew just Luke Lars? So that, you know, I think maybe because the whole Anakin thing hadn't been fleshed out at that point with George Lucas. I think things were still in motion when he wrote the original Star Wars. But even Obi-Wan Kenobi, like, you know, he's one of the last Jedi, he's in hiding. So he, you know, he gets people to start calling him Ben, but he still uses the last name Kenobi. Again, it's like, if you're in hiding, you change both your names. You know, like, to me, you know, it'd be like, if you're a serial killer, like let's say Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, had escaped and went into hiding, but now he's calling himself Joe Dahmer, you know, while he's in hiding. Like, people would be put two and two together. You know, somebody would be like, hey, wait a minute, you know, you look like this Jeffrey Dahmer, but you're Joe Dahmer. But, you know, like, I don't understand the thinking behind it. So that part's always bugged me. Then another part that kind of bugs me / bums me out is when we meet Obi-Wan in the original Star Wars, episode 4, you know, he's dressed like in very similar robes as Uncle Owen and the other moisture farmers in Tatooine. Obviously, he's dressing to fit in with the locals, right? But then when we go to the Phantom Menace and we get to see the Jedi in their prime, they're wearing the same type of clothing that Obi-Wan wore in episode 4. And I'm thinking to myself, but he was dressing as a moisture farmer. But you're telling me that the Jedi dress as moisture farmers? Like, that's their normal attire? Because from what I heard, when we saw Luke in Return of the Jedi, like, in Return of the Jedi, he's wearing, like, that black suit and stuff. That was supposed to be what the Jedi were supposed to wear. Like, he was actually wearing a Jedi uniform in Return of the Jedi. And that was, you know, like, when they filmed it in 1983, that was the premise, is that Luke is dressed as a Jedi now, because he is a Jedi. So when they went back and did Phantom Menace, they should have had them all wearing similar outfits that Luke wore in Return of the Jedi. But instead, they had them all wearing what Obi-Wan wore in the original Star Wars, which was his moisture farmer getup. So that continuity thing kind of bugs me. Because, you know, especially when, you know, I know, like, they were trying to go for, you know, like, the Jedi are kind of like Buddhists, like, kind of wearing robes and that sort of thing. And you know, and all that kind of stuff. But, no, I would rather have seen them wearing something like Luke wore in Return of the Jedi. So, yeah, those are my two big questionable Star Wars pop culture. Because that always bugs me. Always bugged me, you know, that... Because you'd think, you know, especially with the Empire, like, I realize Tatooine's remote and all that kind of stuff, but the Empire has to have agents out there, you know, and if they come across, you know, this kid, his last name's Skywalker, and, you know, hey, wasn't there, you know, famous Jedi named Anakin Skywalker? Like, even if they don't know that that's Darth Vader, you know, the name should ring a bell, because it's not like, you know, Williams or Thompson or something like that, where it's a common name. But, I don't know, maybe in the Star Wars universe, maybe there is a bunch of different Skywalkers running around, and we just don't know them.
Well, and that's what I was thinking. So, in the Star Wars universe, Skywalker could be like Smith or Jones.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
But if it'd be kind of stupid if it was. So, let's say it's Lockhart. Decent. Mm-hmm. You know, like, rarer names. All right, if one of us moved over to Africa to be in hiding. And, you know, many movies later were discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a certain logic of, well, who's going to find me in Africa? Why bother changing my name? But if I'm trying to hide, I change my name.
Yeah.
Or if I have a kid I'm trying to hide, I change the name. Even for any reason, like, and I've brought up the example for other things in the past, but I think it works here too. The number of people with the last name Hitler in the New York City phone book before World War II and after World War II was very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
As it went from, you know, there was a fair amount to zero. I almost like something happened.
Yep.
And none of them wanted that last name anymore associated with them. But, you know, it's still the same family. They're not in Germany. They're somewhere else. But they're like, nope, we're not using this name anymore to protect ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So you would think it'd do it too. But I mean, it's Star Wars. And overall, like, we all kind of got to give Star Wars a pass for things.
Yeah.
Star Wars, it's a whole other thing, and I've had to come to terms with my feelings for Star Wars. Star Wars, one of the issues is it's still being treated as one continuous story.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we look at how, you know, we'll treat comics now. I'm like, okay, here's Batman. It could be any one of these actors. It could be any one of these animated series. It could be anything for comics. As long as it's parents died, rich fights crime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's all we need. You can tell whatever other story you want, and we don't think that it's all one long continuous story. It's just, this is this Batman story. You know, and there's many, many different versions. And all of your classic ones you can do that with. And there's probably a way to do that with Star Wars, and there's probably someone that will do that eventually.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, it's still being treated as one story, and it just isn't.
No.
But there's also, like, George Lucas, probably with the best first draft of a thing ever, but then someone else should have come along to add, like, continuity and consistency and a little bit of vision for it. You know, not random people, not like, oh, let's change writers and directors with the middle movie and then have to scramble to clean up everything for the third. No, why would we do that? But there's got to be some way to take, here's Star Wars, here's the stuff that we started with, but here's how it came along later, and here's how we reinterpreted it, and here's how we tried to clean up this idea, and this guy's just running with an ice cream machine, but we'll pretend it's something else. You know, like, there's stuff that could, if you took all of it and kind of restarted, okay, let's tell the story from everything we have now, and the story that we know it is, what if we could retell it cleaner from the start? Mm-hmm. Almost like, you know, kind of like Marvel doing Ultimate Universe in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, let's take Spider-Man again and redo it from the start. All right, what would we redo? Well, let's have Uncle Ben be around longer so it matters more when he dies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's tweak this. Let's change this a little bit. I'm like, oh, yeah, a lot of that stuff worked. Because we know we have all these years of learning from it. That when we go back to the beginning, we can make the beginning make a little more sense.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you watch episode 4, and it's perfectly fine. Because it's only that. And then even the first three, you know what I mean, 4, 5, and 6 there.
Mm-hmm.
It works because that's it. You just don't pay attention to anything else. And yeah, stuff starts to fall apart. Like, well, they're brother and sister. Why do they kiss? Yeah. It's almost like there wasn't a grand plan like they pretended there was. But then you add more and more and more, and all this stuff starts falling apart because there wasn't one vision from the start for it, even though they pretend that there was. Oh, no, I wrote this long story and cut it up into 3 parts. No, you didn't.
Yeah, it was definitely a fluid process. Like, I think he had some things in mind. Like, I know one thing that I still remember from my childhood, like, hearing the backstory of Star Wars, that Darth Vader got his injuries from fighting Obi-Wan and getting burnt in a volcano.
Yes. Clone Wars were a thing from the start before we got to see it.
Yeah. So, like, I know there are some things, but at the same time, I also know some things were changed, you know, abruptly or midstream. Like, for example, because people always, like you mentioned, pointed to Luke and Leia kissing. Well, it's always explained away, well, they didn't know they were brother and sister, right? Mm-hmm. But originally, from what I've read, is Leia was never intended to be Luke's sister. Obi-Wan says, like, when Luke goes off, leaves Dagobah to save his friends, Obi-Wan tells Yoda, you know, that boy's our last hope, and Yoda says, no, there's another. We know now that they're referring to Leia, but at the time, that wasn't the intention. The intention was the sequel trilogy would be about Luke finding his sister. But because after, Empire Strikes Back, there was a lot of financial hardship on George Lucas during that, and then with Return of the Jedi, you know, like it was tough, and George Lucas was just kind of done. But he kind of painted himself into a corner because he had already rebranded Star Wars as Episode 4. So he knew he was going back to tell the backstory, but he was like, I just want it to end with Return of the Jedi. I don't want that. I don't want to do a sequel trilogy, which is kind of what the intention was. Even though he says that wasn't the intention, but there's people that say, yeah, there was going to be more adventures of Luke, Leia, and them, but it didn't happen. But yeah, the intention was that Luke was going to go look for his sister in the sequel trilogy. But then they just wrote Leia as the sister for Return just to make it simple and just to kind of end that plot thread. But yeah, it'd be neat if they would go and redo Star Wars. Like, I know that people might think that's blasphemous, but I think there's so much you could insert and add to it to make it better. Because I think ultimately that's what's going to have to happen eventually to erase, you know, the stink of the sequel trilogy. Because they, you know, they really blew it with those movies. And you'll never get a chance to do that again, because now Carrie Fisher's gone, and, you know, Harrison Ford's not getting any younger. Mark Hamill's getting older too. You know, like, it's like what they're proposing to do with the Harry Potter franchise, like doing it as a TV series on HBO, where each season will be one of the books. I think that would work for Star Wars if they were to do that one.
Yeah.
You know, do the prequel, do the sequel or the original trilogy, and then do a sequel trilogy, but make it work. But yeah, I would love, if they did that, I'd love them to adapt Timothy Zahn's Thrawn trilogy as the sequel trilogy, because that, to me, that's the sequel trilogy we should have got.
Well, I think I'm opening a larger thing here. If Star Wars isn't going to be one story, which I don't think it can be anymore, no. Marvel, okay, here's our sandbox. We're telling stories within here.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be part of a larger continuity, but here's the toys you can play with in this world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what's Marvel? It's a superhero universe, and, you know, we kind of know, like, okay, that's what's going on here. What's Star Wars? Well, it's an adventure in space. Okay, but why Star Trek's an adventure in space? What's the difference here?
Mm-hmm.
We have an evil government angle that keeps popping up, and religion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes it different.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, okay. But you can play with that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
and just be like, all right, here's something that takes place within space with these two rules going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be connected to Skywalkers or to freaking anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be part of, well, where does it fit into the bigger storyline? Is it 100 years in the past or 100 years in the future? And, does it matter?
Yeah.
Like it's a cool thing in space, and sometimes we have electric swords. Yep. Let's just have fun.
And quick tangent. One of the things I did like about the sequel trilogy, but then they retconned it, was in The Last Jedi, when we finally find out who Rey's family is, and we find out they're like nobody, that anyone can be a Jedi. And then mm-hmm. and then the movie ends with that kid, you know, he
with the broom?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. I was like, you don't have to be a Skywalker or a Palpatine or whatever to change the world in this universe. But then in Rise of Skywalker, they make her a Palpatine and totally go back on what they did. So.
Well, I still like my idea, and I actually brought it up to a friend this weekend, that my hope with the third was that there's not the dark side, there's not the light side. There's not Jedi, there's not Sith, only there could be something in between. There could be something mm-hmm. with a little bit of both sides. And I was really hoping that gray part of the religion would be called the Skywalkers.
Mm-hmm.
And have that something be like they are the ones that walk in between the two worlds, you know, something like that. And yep. that's why they bring balance to it. Like, you could have tied everything in and it would have worked.
Mm-hmm.
Winston's like, nope, I'm Skywalker, I'm a Jedi. It's like, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, that was such a... Yeah, anyway. Kev, did you have another thing you wanted to throw out there?
For this topic, I do not, Chris, but if you wanted to... We mentioned it off air. If you want to do something else, I'm up for that, too.
Well, I got a couple more real quick. So I'll do a quick lightning round.
Okay, I might tangent off of them. Let's see.
All right, so questionable pop culture. One of the things, like, I complain about modern Star Trek a lot. One of the things I've come to realize is one of the things that drives me nuts about the new Star Trek shows is Star Trek writers don't know how to write a crew. And what I mean is, whether it's the Enterprise or the Discovery, you know, these are Federation officers. They've went to an academy. They've trained to become officers. I mean, there's some chief petty officers there as well, but I mean, they've also had their training. There's a chain of command. You know, you go on the bridge, you got your captain, you got your first officer, you got, you know, your different positions. You got your different ranks, you know, Star Trek, you got cadet, ensign. There was yeoman, but they don't really use yeoman anymore. Lieutenant commander, captain, commodore, admiral. And there's this militaristic / naval aspect to Starfleet, you know, with this ranking system. But on modern Star Trek, they just, I think with the original series and with Next Generation, they had veterans working on those shows. Like, Gene Roddenberry was a veteran of World War II, along with some of the actors that were on the show, as well as some of the writers and producers of the show. You know, they, you know, were either in World War II or they were in Korea. You know, or they had done, you know, some sort of military service, because, you know, that generation, that, you know, like, even if you weren't serving in wartime, a lot of people just served, you know, like in peacetime as well. So when they would write these characters, they would write them to be true to that environment. You know, like, there's a captain. You know, you have to, you know, you answer to the captain. You know, what he says goes. If you disobey an order, question an order, you're going to be in trouble. On modern Star Trek, Because I think these, like, the writers, oh, real quick, the reason why it transcended from the original series to Next Gen to Deep Space Nine to Voyager to Enterprise, like, you know, the subsequent people that would come in, like Ronald Moore, Rick Berman, Michael Piller, guys like that, who didn't necessarily, you know, may have not served, but because Roddenberry had this, you know, these rules that you had to follow, they followed them. And one of them was you respect the chain of command, and, you know, these characters work together. They don't fight amongst themselves. They, you know, they're a better breed of human than we are. But these new Star Trek writers, because they're not following those edicts, they're not following what came before, they write these crews, so it's not relatable. It's the irony is they're trying to be relatable, but at the same time, they're not being relatable. And what I mean is, they write these crews like they're writing a CW show, like, you know, like they. These people on these ships don't act like Starfleet officers should be acting. You know, like they're swearing, they're saying inappropriate things, they're talking over people, they're questioning their superior officers. For example, in one of the most recent episodes that came out of Star Trek Discovery, I didn't watch it, but I watched this YouTube channel where they break down the episodes and explain what's happening and you know, God bless them. They're doing the Lord's work. So I don't have to sit through these crappy episodes. I can just hear what's going on and then listen to their commentary. So on Discovery, there's this new first officer. I can't remember his name. But anyway, Lieutenant Tilly comes to him and starts reaming him out because this guy's kind of a hard ass. You know, he's a no-nonsense commanding officer. And Tilly doesn't like that. So she comes into his office or his quarters or whatever, and she's, you know, giving him the gears. And he basically shuts her down. She asks for permission to speak. And he says, denied. And then she literally says, well, I'm going to say what I'm going to say anyway. And then she again starts berating this guy. In a real military or naval setting, if you ask permission to speak from your commanding officer and it's denied and you ignore that command anyway, you would be in big trouble. Like, you would be charged with insubordination. You could be, you know, you could be brought up on real charges. You could be, you know, either dismissed for disobeying orders, or you could be jailed for disobeying orders. But these writers don't understand that. Like, the moment he said permission denied and she started speaking out, like, she should have been slapped down. Like, not literally, but figuratively. You know, but of course, because this is modern Star Trek and they write it like a CW show, he's learning this lesson. And there's no consequences to her. And that's not real. That's not real to the way this, you know, crew would work. You know, if it was like an independent crew, if it's, you know, like, say you're on the Millennium Falcon or you're on the Serenity, you know, like, these people are not officers, then okay, I get it. You know, people are going to talk like that. But if you're in an institution, a structured institution, that wouldn't happen. And then, yeah, the whole episode is about her. Well, this is the B plot. She's trying to get this guy to mellow out and be a nicer guy. And then at the end of the episode, like, instead of including him with their group of people, like, she excludes him. She goes out of her way to exclude him. So she's telling him to be a better person, while at the same time she's being a terrible person. It makes no sense. But yeah, that's one, you know, I've said, you know, the biggest problem with modern Star Trek is the writing, and this is an example of what's wrong with the writing. Kevin, any comments?
So, very similar thoughts. There's people that watch Law and Order, SVU, whatever, mm-hmm. all the time. When CSI was huge, you know, and they would come to courts, to judges, to lawyers, to police, to whatever. Well, can't you do this? Can't you do this? How's this happen? You know, because mm-hmm. they think what they're seeing on TV is real.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the actual process for things. Like, no, that's entertainment. That's not how this works.
Yeah.
There are certain things. That's how we tell that story in an hour, 40 whatever minutes minus commercials.
Yep.
This actual process takes months or years. There's mm-hmm. paperwork that has to be filled out. There's procedure. There's technology used on these shows because it looks pretty on camera that doesn't actually exist in real life.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't understand that. There was a... There's a person in the area looking to write a mystery novel. And is trying to figure out how to get the correct information so when writing a crime scene, it reads correctly. The mm-hmm. detective does ABC, and that is the correct ABC for procedure, so it makes sense in the book. And I feel like your attention to detail to get things correct does depend on what type of story you're telling and how you're telling it. If I'm telling, like, a gritty noir modern day, though, and it's like, oh, Detective Bob showed up at the crime scene and he said, send that to the lab. And then he goes and gets a drink and smokes a cigarette and he gets a call from the lab hours later to tell him what's up. I don't need to go into what happens in the lab. I don't need to have that scientific process correct mm-hmm. because that's not the point of my story. My story is to tell, like, oh, Detective Bob did this and then he went out and got drunk and then he found out who the killer is, and then he went out to, you know, arrest them. Like, the lab part is not important to the story, so I don't need those details.
Mm-hmm.
But, like the Star Trek example you're given, there are ways that you could have a certain conversation, and I think Battlestar Galactica did it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the commanding officer still. I might be willing to give you a break to say your piece. And within this 5 minutes, you're allowed to say your piece and not get in trouble. But as soon as that 5 minutes is over, we're back to the usual chain of command here.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason I, as the superior officer, might give you a break for that 5 minutes is because you have earned that 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Because you, outside of this, do usually follow the proper chain of command and respect and everything else. I am friendly with my boss, and I will even turn sometimes and be like, I need to talk to the person, not my boss, for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't need my boss's answer. I need a human answer. that's the best way I can put it right now. But, like,
yeah.
I need a genuine answer. I don't need a work answer. Or give me both. Like, hey, do you understand this? However, what is the professional way we need to go about it? You know, mm-hmm. like there's nothing wrong with saying, oh boy, that sucks, but you can't send an email saying, hey, this sucks. You know, so there's proper ways to do that stuff. And you're right. I think, like you were going with previous writers, I'm thinking comics. Every one of your, like, Architects of Marvel, let's just go with that,
mm-hmm.
were had military history.
Yep.
You know, so they knew the breakdowns of stuff and how things worked and hierarchy and orders and just details like that probably came naturally to them. And I think if you're a good writer and it's in the story, like if Captain America said anything about a superior officer, you better get that right.
Mm-hmm.
If you're doing it for Star Trek, you better get it right. And you're absolutely correct. I mean, like, my example off the top of my head is a court. You don't use certain language in the court. You take off your hat in the court. You are dressed appropriately. Even if you don't respect the person, you respect the institution.
Yeah.
So a bridge for Star Trek should be the same thing. Even if you want to argue with who the commanding officer is, you respect this setup here.
Exactly.
And everything that came before you and will come after you.
There's a scene that's on YouTube. It's from season 7 of TNG. It's when Data's in command of the Enterprise, and Worf is his first officer because Picard and Riker, they've been kidnapped and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, Worf does is he shows irritation with Data, and then Data says, may see you in the ready room. So they go into Picard's ready room, and Data has this conversation with him. He says, I'm dissatisfied with your performance as first officer, and Worf asks why, and he says, you continue to question my, I forget how he puts it, but you question me in front of the crew. I don't believe this is appropriate behavior. And Worf says, well, with all due respect, I've always felt that, I'm able to speak, my mind, even if it went against Captain Picard or Commander Riker, what they were saying. And Data said, yeah, that's true, but you're my first officer. If you have a problem, you need to discuss it with me in private, not in front of the crew. And like he says, like, I don't remember, I can't recall Commander Riker ever publicly showing disdain with his commanding officer as you just did a moment ago. And Worf, of course, knows, Data's got the perfect memory, so he knows he's been had. He's like, yes, sir. And then, Data gives him the option, you can go back to tactical, or you can conform to the guidelines I've set out. And Worf says, I'd like to stay at my current post. And so Data says, I expect you to follow these guidelines. Dismissed. Worf turns around to leave the room, and Data says, Mr. Worf, I'm sorry if I've ended our friendship. And Worf comes back and says, no, sir, I'm the one that has jeopardized our friendship, not you. And then he says, if you're willing to overlook this, I would like to continue to consider you my friend. And Data says, I would like that as well. And then Worf says, thank you, sir. And then he leaves. It's 2 minutes. It's a 2-minute scene, but there's so much there. That is how officers are supposed to act with each other, not what modern Star Trek is showing us. And I hate it. This is supposed to be the future. These people are supposed to be better than us now. Like, Star Trek was something that we were supposed to aspire to, not something that we watch and we think, this is just like, at work, only it's on Star Trek. These people are supposed to be more evolved than we are. And I think modern Star Trek writers just don't understand that. Honestly, I think modern Star Trek writers just don't give a shit. Like I said, these episodes are, it's like I'm watching a CW show. And Star Trek should not be a CW show. It should be better than that. But anyway, I digress. So my last question, will pop culture, and I think I've mentioned this before on another episode, but I'm going to bring it up again. So there's the movie Double Jeopardy. Do you remember that one, Kev, with Ashley Judd and the guy from The Fugitive?
Tommy Lee Jones?
Tommy Lee Jones, yeah. Do you remember that one at all?
I don't remember. I mean, I remember it existing. I don't remember if I ever watched it, but I'm familiar with its existence.
Okay, so the premise of the show is Ashley Judd is married to, what's his name? Bruce, he played Captain Pike in the 2009 Star Trek. Bruce, Oh, shit. I'm drawing a blank on his name now. He's a Canadian actor. Anyway, Bruce Greenwood. So anyway, she's married to Bruce Greenwood. They have a kid, blah, blah, blah. I don't think it's a happy marriage. If I remember correctly, I forget what happens, but anyway, she gets framed for his murder, right? So she goes to jail for murder because all the evidence points to her having murdered her husband. She leaves her son with her best friend. And then when she's in prison, like after, I don't know, a year or some time has passed, she calls her friend to check on her son. She gets on the phone with her son, and then her son says, "Oh, hi, Daddy." And because Bruce Greenwood, it's revealed that Bruce Greenwood is alive. He's with the friend, and they're raising his son together. That, you know, basically he framed her for murder.
Okay.
So anyway, some time passes. She learns about the concept of double jeopardy, that you can't be convicted of the same crime twice. So her plan is to get out of prison and then go kill her husband, because they can't charge her for killing her husband because she's already been charged and convicted of it. So she goes out and she's in this halfway house type of thing, like she's on parole, but she has to report this halfway house. And I think Tommy Lee Jones runs the halfway house. And then she escapes because she needs to go find her husband, right? So Tommy Lee Jones is following her, and they go, I think it's, they go down to New Orleans and stuff like that. The end of the movie, she finds her husband, and throughout the movie, Tommy Lee Jones is pursuing her, kind of like the fugitive, right? But she's managed to stay a step ahead of him. She finds her husband, she kills him, Tommy Lee Jones captures her, and then at the end of the movie, you see her getting out of prison, because, you know, it's been revealed that, you know, her husband faked his death and she was set up and blah, blah, blah. And now she's being released. But I'm thinking to myself, but she did kill him. So she should still serve her sentence. Like, yes, I realize he set her up initially, but she still ultimately committed the crime. So double jeopardy doesn't really apply, because she is, you know, being sentenced to, you know, serve her time in prison for killing her husband, which she actually ultimately did. Not to mention the fact that she ran away from her halfway house, that she was a fugitive. There's all those charges that just kind of got dropped. So, like, that movie didn't make sense, because double jeopardy wasn't a thing because she was still charged. Or she should have still done her sentence. It would have worked had she not killed her husband. If she'd kept him alive, he ended up in prison for doing all of this. And then she gets exonerated. That would have made sense. But the whole point is, you know, like the title of the movie is, you know, Double Jeopardy. You know, she can kill her husband because she's already been convicted of it. Okay. But then she should still have to serve out her sentence. Like, she shouldn't be given, you know, special dispensation. She still killed him, ultimately.
I would think, I kind of want to look this up. I would think our options are, like, an appeal process. Hey, in light of the fact that he is alive.
Was alive. She ended up killing him.
Yeah. But, like, even before that, in light of the fact that he's alive, she should not be in jail for his murder because he's alive. So, therefore, an appeal process should overturn the lower court and release her.
And I guess she killed him in self-defense. So, I guess I guess there could be something there.
Yeah. Okay, so she killed him, and okay, well, we can't try her twice on the same charge here. all right, then pull an OJ and do it as she's, what did the Goldman family do? Like, he was civilly responsible for the death. Like, there's a way to go about it.
Yeah, I didn't like how they handled it in the movie. Like, it just seemed like she got a pass. And I'm like, no, I think it would have been a bigger process than that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not, I mean, that's, oh, we have an idea for a movie and for a story, but an ounce of research and it falls apart.
Yeah, like, it would have worked had she served her sentence and actually got out and then was free. Then if she went and killed him, she couldn't be charged because she was already charged, right? But the fact that she was on probation tells me she hasn't served her sentence.
Yeah.
So that's the problem.
And a movie like that, a real world movie, it should have followed our rules and law.
Yeah.
Like, I was having a conversation of, you know, if you actually thought about things in comics, a lot of stuff would fall apart for, okay, like, for example, you know, a bad guy is convicted of murder and sentenced to a life sentence. All right, well, in comics, characters die and come back to life all the time. So if the character dies and comes back to life, then technically they did do a life sentence because they died. So then are they just free? You know, when they come back to life, like, well, we said for life and you died and came back. So you're good now. You know?
Okay. Well, until
the next story.
That's what happened to Jon Snow on Game of Thrones, because he took the oath to be a brother of the Night's Watch, and the oath is for life. And then he died and then was resurrected. So he wasn't held to that oath after that. Like, he gave it up. But yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, with Double Jeopardy and with Law and Order, stuff like that, like I said, it wasn't realistic. Like, there would have been a process, but that's not entertaining. People don't want to watch that.
Yeah.
So that's why they, you know, speed things up and change things, you know, to make it easier. But anyway, I think we can call this a podcast segment. But for this episode, we'll do a segment of Brain Candy. So this is the segment where we discuss things that we're reading, watching, whatever we're feeding our brain. And then if we want, we can make a pick or a pan. So, Kevin, what do you got this week for Brain Candy?
All right. So I was watching, and it's kind of my timing for this. I was watching, there's a WWE reality show on Roku called Next Gen. And the whole idea is we're going to invite about 100, give or take, mostly student athletes to try out. And it's because, you know, once you graduate college, what else are you going to do? There's not pro track and field. There's not pro gymnastics. You know, there's not pro cheerleading, but you're a college level athlete. So let's see if you can translate this over here. It's an 8-episode series. They're about 45, 50 minutes each. And I'm like, this is really interesting, because I remember watching Tough Enough when that show was on years ago. And that was more reality show style. Oh, let's put them all in the same house and watch the hijinks. This is more athletic documentary. Let's take these athletes and see how well they do. And there's some that's like, oh, Mike, you're the fastest. You jump the highest. You're the strongest. Okay, day two, you get 1 minute on the microphone. Tell us who you are. And people that were knocking out the physical aspect of it completely freeze up. And are just, they're like, well, you got to be able to do both. And even though you're scoring hundreds over here, you scored zero over here. So we're not going to keep you. And it was like very interesting to see how they're going about it. And you go to, like, especially women's wrestling, what it used to be. Oh, let's take a very pretty model and we'll teach her how to wrestle. And we'll teach her how to be an athlete. And now it's like, all right, let's take someone that is an athlete and has the work ethic that we want, and we can just teach them to look, men or women, we can just teach them how to look nice on camera. Like, here's your makeup, here's where you go to tan, here's how you get nice gear made. But let's take them, you know, all these strengths they already have, and we'll fill in the rest. So I'm watching it. I'm like four episodes in. I'm like, this is very interesting. I'm enjoying this. And then WWE announced, hey, we've cut these 12 wrestlers, and half of them were people on this show. I'm like, I'm not going to invest 4 to 5 more hours of my life to see who makes it to the end of the show, when, which was taped last year.
Yep.
When this season's been up on Roku for 4 weeks, maybe 6, and you fired half the people. So, like, why would I waste my time watching it and be invested in this? Like, they're gone. The timing on this is terrible. I have no reason to keep watching the show or care, because you got rid of them. Yep. And it just bothered the hell. So what I ended up doing was I skipped all the middle episodes and I went to the end. I'm like, all right, well, let me just see who actually won and how they got there. You know, and I'll watch that, but I skipped the rest of it. And I'm like, I can't imagine any other thing that would put out a season of a show and before people have a chance to watch the entire season say, oh, never mind. You know what it'd be like? And now I didn't watch any of it, nor would I. That Golden Bachelor show. Okay, they do the whole show, they get married at the end, and what was it, like 6 months later they announced they were divorced? It would be like them announcing that couple's divorced halfway through the season. Then why bother watching it?
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And I was just so frustrated. I was like, I have a million things I want to watch. And the actual people that made the show made it worthless for me to watch. And I was mad I invested what time I did in it. So freaking annoyed.
Yep.
I'm going to try. I'm going through. I think I want to finish that Squid Game, the actual competition one, not, you know, the drama.
Yep.
I watched 2 episodes of it forever ago, and it was just very interesting. So I want to see where that goes.
Okay.
But now, who knows? Who knows the next time we talk if that's what I'll actually watch or not, but that's going to be, that's something I started and want to finish here at some point soon. What's going to get me, we don't know when yet, my son and I watching the latest Mr. Beast video, and he let something slip of, it was something along the lines of, if you like this video, you're going to see a lot more like this on my new show on Amazon Prime, more details later. And we're just like, what is going on? Like, he's already doing crazy videos, and Amazon's going to give him a budget? So, no idea when, no idea what, no idea what's going to happen, but we already have it planned. Whenever we know that show debuts, we're just going to be together to watch it.
Excellent.
That's his hero, and I'm enjoying watching all of it, too. So, I got to figure out what the heck that is and how much money they just... The rumor was he had a deal with Netflix coming up. So, I will be very curious how, the numbers that were thrown around. And be very jealous of some 20-something-year-old on YouTube that's probably going to be a billionaire.
Yep. Yeah, it's crazy. Who knew, you know? But, anywho, for me this week, Saturday was a busy day. I went and watched The Phantom Menace in theaters for May the 4th, and I took my wife. So yeah, like I'd mentioned, I think last episode that we recorded, I went to the original theater I went to 25 years ago to watch it.
Oh, cool.
And I mean, back then that it was brand new. It was a brand new part of West Edmonton Mall. They just opened it. Phantom Menace was the first movie that they were showing in all their screens. So I didn't actually watch it on the original screen I watched it on, but I watched it at the same theater. So that was really cool. made me real nostalgic for the old theater, because we used to have like this huge animatronic dragon in that theater, and it actually would, every 15 minutes it would like move, it would move its head and its eyes, and it would breathe fire. It was really cool. Yeah, look it up on YouTube, West Edmonton Mall Dragon. It was really cool, but it broke down, it got too costly, and ultimately they took it out. So now when you walk in there, it's like, it seems like a big cave, because the roof is so high on this theater, that because there used to be an animatronic dragon there that's no longer there. So, you know, I was feeling a little nostalgic for that. But, you know, I took my wife to it. She had never actually, like, in all the years we've been together, we've never actually sat down and watched all the Star Wars movies.
No.
I've watched Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi with her. And I know she's seen Revenge of the Sith because she came to the theater with me to watch it when it came out. But other than that, like, she's seen clips, you know, because I'll play clips from YouTube, and you know, back in the day, even before YouTube, I would just you know, put my DVDs in and watch certain scenes from certain movies, but I never actually sat down and watched them with her, besides the three I mentioned. So this was her first time actually watching Phantom Menace from beginning to end, and she really enjoyed it. And surprisingly, she thought Jar Jar was hilarious. I thought she would find him cringy, because that's how I found him the first time I watched that movie. But she's like, no, I thought he was funny. He made me laugh. I was like, oh, okay. You know, that's good. And she got some of the beats that I wasn't sure she would get. You know, that, you know, this little boy Anakin and Padme, you know, are eventually going to hook up and be Luke and Leia's mom and dad. She actually got that. I didn't think she would, but she did. And yeah, it was a great time. She enjoyed herself, and yeah, brought back a lot of memories. I can't believe it's 25 years that I saw that movie in the theater. And then yeah, Saturday night I got to MC Across the Stars. It was a space tribute concert put on by the Mill Creek Colliery Band. They're a band based out of Edmonton. So yeah, I got to go to the Robertson Wesley United Church. That's where they had the concert. This big United Church. It's one of those churches that has like the two-story organ in it. It was really cool, really nice church. Yeah, I'm just so glad it worked out well. I know walking in there, I felt really underdressed because everyone was wearing like suits and tuxedos, and I was like, oh man, here I am wearing my Pac-Man Pac-Man button-up shirt and my jeans. Because I did, like, Stephanie, one of my co-hosts from Trek 171, the Beta Crew episodes, she's part of this band, and she's the one that asked me to MC it. She actually asked Ragnar and I both, but Ragnar couldn't do it because was at a show this last weekend up north, so he wasn't even near Edmonton. So I did it, and yeah, it was great. You know, I got to know the composer. He was very, very friendly guy. Got a lot of good compliments. You know, a lot of people seem to enjoy it. My attire, even though I felt grossly underdressed, a lot of people appreciated it. They thought it brought, you know, lightened it up. And that's what Stephanie was going for. That's why she asked me, because she's like, you know, I know you know a lot of science fiction stuff. You'll be able to make, you know, like, she's like, basically what you do on the podcast, you know, like you make commentaries on things and explain things. You know, that's kind of what we want. And that's what I did. And, yeah, it worked out well. You know, I want to say, like, the first minute I got a little bit, you know, the butterflies in the stomach. I'm like, you know, it's one thing to sit here in a room talking a microphone, talking with you, Kevin, and the other podcasters, but it's another thing to stand in front of a group where there's hundreds of people looking at you. But you know that because you did the ring announcer thing.
Yeah.
So you know it's, you know what it's like. But yeah, no, once that first minute, once I got into it, and it was great. I brought my wife with me. My mom came with us as well. Other than that, I didn't see anyone else that I knew there, besides Stephanie. So I got to meet a bunch of new people. I told some jokes. They landed well. People were laughing. I know one of the guys with the band said, like, normally our crowds are very, you know, quiet and prim and proper. He's like, I liked seeing people laugh at our concert. Like, we usually don't get that. And I was like, oh, awesome. You know, glad I could, you know, bring a little humor and good cheer to the festivities. But yeah, it was fantastic. I hope I get to do it again sometime. It was a lot of fun. And it was my first time actually meeting Stephanie. You know, like, we podcasted since November, you know, like, we missed a few months here and there, but usually we do an episode a month. I've seen her, the first time we podcasted together, she used her video Skype feature. Her and Ray both did that. So I got to see both of them, on Skype, but I've never actually met them in person. So yeah, this was my first time meeting Stephanie, and yeah, I got to meet her husband and her friends, and yeah, it was a great time. It was awesome. But yeah, that was my weekend.
Sounds fantastic though.
Yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. Yeah, I definitely hope I can do it again. And yeah, it's pretty cool because they had a program for the show and my name's on the program. Like, that was cool. And then at the back of the program, the logo for the Pop Culture Pub Podcast Network's on it as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I was like, cool, I designed that logo and it's on a program. So yeah, it was fantastic. So yeah, fingers crossed I'll get to do something like that again. Well, I think we can call this an episode, Kev. But before we go, let's play that little game of where we can find you on the internet. For myself, you can find me here at the Pop Culture Pub Podcast Network. We do have an episode of Trek 1701 with Stephanie coming up this month. We're going to be talking about the Orville Season 1. So again, that's Trek 1701, the Beta Crew episodes. It'll be, yeah, towards the end of the month. So yeah, that's on the go. Our next recording will be Geek Fallout Reloaded. It'll be probably next week, I'm thinking. But with the Oilers being in the playoffs, my recording dates are kind of here and there right now. So I, you know, it'll be next week that we'll have a new episode out. And I haven't been blogging much. I haven't been reading a lot of comics lately. Yeah, if I have anything new, you know, go check it out. If not, you can look at some of my older content, and that's randomnerdness.blogspot.com. Kev, where can we find you, sir?
I'm still, for now, on most social medias at Hellions Team, and Hellions.team.com is my home blog.
Excellent. All right, well, on behalf of myself, Chris Lockhart, my co-host this evening, Kevin Decent, and the rest of us here at the Pop Culture Pub Podcast Network, I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to listen to Kevin and I talking about questionable pop culture. And we will see you again in the not-too-distant future.